Today's great debate, the greatest NFL one-hit wonder of all time. Welcome to the show, Maggie Gray, Andrew Perloff. We've gotten so many amazing nominees, I guess, Pearl?
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of one-hit wonders.
We didn't even expect this to be as crazy as it was. We got everything from Josh Gordon and Tim Tebow to Vince Ferragamo and Timmy Smith.
Timmy Smith was a good one.
That was a real good one. This has been a lot of fun. So at 855-212-4227, you can keep those coming. Of course, you're always welcome to weigh in our chat, youtube.com/InfinitySportsNet. And if you are watching the show, well, then you're going to see our very next guest. That is Bud Elliott. He is the co-host of the Cover 3 podcast with CBS Sports. And, of course, fans can check out Bud's coverage and the Cover 3 on YouTube and wherever you get your podcast. Bud, it's Maggie and Perloff. Thank you so much for the time this morning. How you been?
Been well. College football season just off with a bang, and it's been exciting.
If we did one-hit wonders for college football, like, we'd never get another word in edgewise because there's been so many great one-off seasons. We thought this might have been a great one-off season for Notre Dame, but not so sure about that now. So they lay the big egg against Northern Illinois. Now they've got Purdue. You know, Bud, this has become too familiar on Marcus Freeman's watch. He has not won more than five consecutive games since he took over at Notre Dame. Should his seat be warm right now?
I think warm is probably the appropriate term. If you had said hot, I was going to have to sell that. But warm kind of makes sense, right? Like, you really cannot, as the Notre Dame coach, be losing multiple games at home as a 20-point favorite in a three-year span. And they've done it, you know, almost on a yearly basis now. So there is clearly something going on with the Irish where they're just not prepared to play at like a minimum base level each week. And yet they pull some of these stunning upsets. They go toe-to-toe with Ohio State last year. But look, I think you knew you would have some growing pains. Marcus Freeman had never been a head coach. He had been a successful defensive coordinator. He had been a really good recruiter. He had been a guy that a lot of the players really like. But you know, if you're an Irish fan, you probably are like, I don't really know if we want these growing pains in year three, especially not after our path to the playoff was very much just paved on easy street, right, after they'd gone down there and beaten Texas A&M. And now they have to head to Purdue this weekend on CBS, and Riley Leonard, their quarterback, is banged up with his non-throwing shoulder, which probably shouldn't matter, but he's a better runner than he is a passer. So that non-throwing shoulder is kind of the shoulder where he takes contact. We'll have to see how that works.
But if you look at what happened in the offseason with the transfer portal and the quarterbacks, do you think teams want mulligans like Florida State with DJU, maybe Notre Dame with Riley Leonard, and then Cam Ward looks great in Miami, for example? Are you surprised by the way some of these transfers have played?
A little bit. I think a lot of these transfers who balled out last year and became high draft picks, that they were all in their second or third seasons with the team, right? Jaden Daniels in 2022 for LSU, he was turning wide open touchdowns into just first downs because he was underthrowing guys or he was late to pull the trigger, and then he really emerged in that second season. I do still think it's hard to join a new team, especially if you're a player who joins post-spring and just comes in the summer. Like, that acclimation period is still really short. And these teams took these players because they probably didn't like who they had on the existing roster. So I don't know if they want a full mulligan, but certainly some of them have not worked out, you know, quite as well as they would have thought. I think that's a great point.
Bud Elliott's joining us, Cover 3 Pod. We're big fans. We're talking a little college football here on the Maggie and Perloff Show. You know, we love the state of Idaho. I think Oregon's probably done with Idaho for now, after Idaho and Boise. But we are on in Oregon. We're on in Boise, too. We're big fans of the Oregon program, Bud. But are you seeing any red flags about this slow-ish start? Now, they're 2-0. They've survived. But this hasn't looked like early Dan Lanning seasons in the years past.
So I really thought that Oregon had a bit of a six-week preseason, if you will. And that's not to disrespect the opponents they've played so far. But everybody knows it's all eyes on Ohio State in mid-October. Like, that's kind of the game for the Ducks. So they've had a good run-up here to kind of play around with their roster. They're lucky that the schedule has started off as easily as it had. Now, the results have not come easy, but they had better opponents. They would probably have a loss right now on the record, and they don't. They've had a lot of offensive line injuries. I went back and watched the game from the Boise game, and ultimately, they finally bit the bullet and moved the right guard to center, even though he may not know the calls quite as well as the guy they were running out there. But the guy they were running out there, who I think was a walk-on, physically just wasn't holding up at the point of attack. So I think they're like, okay, like, maybe this right guard doesn't know the calls. We'll try to supplement it they ran the ball well against Boise in the second half. I think they may be turning it around. Dylan Gabriel, as we mentioned, like a new transfer quarterback, acclimating to the system. I don't think he's quite as good as Bo Nix was, but maybe he'll start pulling the trigger earlier a little bit. And I think they're going to be just fine this weekend. Now, whether they can beat Ohio State in 4 weeks, I'm not so sure right now.
Do you think they're a championship caliber team?
We on Cover 3, we set their goal as make the Final Four, right? I do think that on body types, like if you just watched them warm up before they put the shoulder pads, Georgia and Ohio State look bigger, faster, stronger than Oregon does. I mean, just like it would be noticeable even as someone, if you don't like follow the sport on an everyday basis. And like I go to all the recruiting camps, so I see like the guys Georgia recruits, they don't look like the people that most of the other teams recruit. They're just a different level of athlete, you know, size, height, weight, speed. But I think Oregon, they would probably need Gabriel to play better than I think he is if they really want to take it home.
But do you think USC has a chance in the Big Ten this year?
I'm shocked, but I do. Yeah. They have some players who we knew had high-level potential who were very much on the path to being a bust. And I got to give a ton of credit to DeAnton Lynn, the son of Anthony Lynn, who turned around UCLA's defense last year. I didn't think they had amazing players at USC just based on the track record of some of these guys. Like, you go out there, you watch Anthony Lucas. He was a former five-star player for us at 24/7 Sports. He had done nothing in his career. I was like, okay, we whiffed. This guy's a bust. He comes out there. He beats the brakes off LSU. And LSU's got an offensive line that's got several guys who are going to hear their names called pretty early in the NFL draft. I'm like, okay, so we know Lincoln Riley can score points. If they're going to get their former five-star rated guys to actually play like five stars on defense, then, yeah, they have a real chance to make some noise.
Bud Elliott is joining us. Cover 3 podcast, also mentioned 24/7 Sports. And we'll ask you a couple maybe recruiting questions in just a little bit. But, okay, going to give you a toss-up question here, Bud, not about a specific program, but let's just take Georgia, maybe Ohio State, and even Texas off the board here. Who's been the most either surprising in a good way, the most team that you think has really looked great? Again, let's take Georgia off the board, Ohio State, Texas. These teams look really, really good. But another team outside of that top three that you've been surprised by?
Tennessee. I was hopeful about Tennessee, but I think the recipe is there. We know they have some real difference makers on the defensive line. They like their starting offensive line. Now, the backups, probably not. Got to stay healthy. And a lot of times you're going to have a special season. You also have a special season of health. I know Phil Steele, the guy that runs the preseason magazine, you know, has pointed out how healthy that Oklahoma team stayed in 2000, where they didn't have a single starter miss a game to injury all year, which is just, hey, you know what? You don't need depth if nobody gets hurt. Right? Like that's a nice thing to have. But Tennessee, they get stops on defense because the defensive line eats people up. Nico, the former five-star quarterback, is playing like a five-star. They're much healthier this year at the receiver position. They look to me like a top five team in the country. They're going to be favored over Alabama at the end of the month, right? I think they're going to be favored in 11 out of 12 ball games and have a really good shot to make the playoff. The only game they'll be an underdog in is, of course, that game at Georgia in November.
But I know, since you know the recruiting business so well, have you ever seen a freshman wide receiver class like this? I mean, Jeremiah Smith and Ryan Williams, they look like they're NFL players already at 17. Brian Williams is 17 and Cam Coleman. Is this like something we should be watching as a historic class?
It is. I don't think it's a trend. I think this is a crazy outlier, and we knew it. I mean, it's so rare that we rate a receiver as the number one player in the country. But I mean, Jeremiah Smith, who is is he the nephew or the cousin of Geno Smith? They're family for sure. He's looked like an NFL player in high school for the last year. It was just unfair. We would have Jeremiah at these elite camps, and I was shooting some TikToks for the CBS social channel, and it took me like one drive to get enough. It's like, okay, cool. He's checked off the list. I'm going to move on to the next guy we need to get some highlights of. And he's destroying like fellow five-star corners who are going to, like guys who are playing right now at Georgia can't check him. So that's different, right? The fact that Ryan Williams is 17 years old and is a featured star player already in Alabama's offense, again, that's not normal. Cam Coleman is just really, really freaky ball skills and a major deep threat. This is the best freshman class we have seen since the Julio Jones, AJ Green class. And it's probably a little deeper. So I'm trying to remember who we had as year number three in that year. But this is something like we saw it coming for a year. It's just not normal to have this. It's pretty cool.
Bud, what about quarterbacks? I mean, we're watching De La Riola go out there for Nebraska as a true freshman. He was the five-star in high school. He's doing this Patrick Mahomes karaoke type thing. Is there anyone like that coming up next year?
So I would say Bryce Underwood, kid out of Michigan. He's committed to LSU. LSU's done a really nice job in recent years of putting quarterbacks in the first round, you know, Jaden Daniels and then Joe Burrow as well, and a couple more. Bryce Underwood is, I'm not going to say he's Cam Newton, but as a physical comparison, he's younger than grade level. He's probably the closest thing we've had to somebody who looks and plays like Cam Newton. Okay, so his first game was just absolutely insane. A bunch of nice throws, and then when the pocket broke down, he just takes it 80 yards and jukes everybody out. And it's like, okay, that's unfair, right? To be a high school that guy. So he's younger than grade level, number one player in the country, going to LSU as of now, kid out of Michigan. So that's the one to watch for the 2025 class.
You know, speaking of De La Riola, is De La Riola like in the Trevor Lawrence, Caleb Williams kind of generational talent level?
I don't think that he is on that level yet. Trevor and Justin, I will say, when we were at the Elite 11 recruiting camps, they were physically on par with the college juniors who come back to be the camp counselors. And that was just, again, once in a while in recruiting, you just get something that's different. I'm like, oh, so the best high schoolers look physically better than the kids who've been in college for 3 years. That's not normal. I don't think Dylan is quite there as far as like the polish, but the upside, the arm is really good. He's got like good contact balance. He moves in the pocket decently. He's not a great athlete, but I don't think that's what you recruited him to be. I do think he's got some real upside. We'll see how he develops that Nebraska offense.
Bud Elliott joining us, Cover 3 Pod. We're big fans of it. Last one from me, Bud, and thanks again for doing this morning. If you were going to grade Deion Sanders on coaching ability alone, X's and O's, what he's responsible for on the sideline, what grade would you give him so far? And you can include Jackson State if you want this, but how good of an X's and O's coach do you think Deion is?
I don't know that's really what he got hired for, right? I think he got hired to attract talent, to change the culture, to bring excitement, to sell tickets. And I don't think he's a great in-game coach, honestly. Like, if you look at the other night, 12 seconds ticks off the clock before he remembers to call timeout. And that, like, at the end of the half, that's kind of a problem. I question if he actually understands the college overtime rules, because twice in a row, he took the ball first, which is just, it would be like giving up the better position in poker. You would like to know what the people before you are going to do before you have to act. Like, do I need to score a touchdown or do I need to score a field goal? Like, I don't think it's a real smart move to take the ball first in college overtime when everybody gets a turn. So certainly some things like that. He really botched the Oregon State game last year with brutal clock mismanagement. They should have won that one, and instead Oregon State got an extra possession and stormed down and won. But I think Colorado would sign up for this experience again. And the reason is he generated so much excitement. Last year when you had all the conference realignment and expansion, if Colorado was still as bad as they were, but they didn't have any of that like juice and the popularity and they weren't doing crazy ratings, I don't know if the Big 12 takes them. So, yeah, the in-game coaching is not great. I think Colorado would sign up again for the experience.
How's Danny Cannell really doing, Bud? Give us a scoop. We both like him. Is it okay? Is he all right?
It's been rough, man. FSU has not looked this bad in practices. So I do think the staff was a little bit shell-shocked that they came out and played like that against BC. Like, they knew Georgia Tech was like a decent opponent, a lot of return experience. FSU had a lot of new pieces. You go play them in Ireland, weird stuff happens, right? I don't think anybody really saw the BC game totally coming based on how they practice. So we'll see if they can get Memphis this weekend. That's If Memphis wins, Danny might have to have a sick day on Monday. I don't know.
I mean, coming off a bye, you got to get it together. Bud Elliott is the co-host of the Cover 3 podcast. You can watch it on CBS Sports. Also, you can check out Cover 3 on YouTube, wherever you get your podcasts. Again, we're big fans. Love the live reaction show on Saturday nights. You guys do a great job. You're up late. You're working all the time. So thank you, Bud. Appreciate it.
Enjoy it. Thanks, y'all.
Thank you, Bud Elliott.
There you go.
Yeah. I mean, Danny Cannell with FSU, his former team. That's not good.
It's good not being Danny Cannell so far this college football season. No, I like Danny. That's mean, but it is funny. It's one of those teams where you view what the team does through a broadcaster's eyes. Like, he's so associated with that team.
Yeah.
Kind of like my buddy Albert Breer, who covers football. Like whenever I watch an Ohio State game, I'm like, oh, I know Albert's screaming at the TV right now. And I watch the Bills thinking of Maggie Gray. And I think a lot of people do that as well.
Well, you know, people have told me that, and I'm flattered by it if you think about me. But also just know whatever you think I'm doing in that moment, it's way worse. Like, you can't even imagine how out of my mind I am. I do that with you with the Eagles, too.
Slight distinction, though. Kanell actually was a star quarterback for Florida State. Actually never suited up for the Bills. You would, I'm sure.
Listen, they could have used me basically through all the 2010s.
You're like, I can help with the new kickoff rule. Put me in, coach.
They needed me to play cover corner, maybe linebacker for a couple of those years. They couldn't stop the run. Oh, God. Anyway, 855-212-4227, college football. A big weekend for Notre Dame. Marcus Freeman and these letdowns, Pearl, have just become all too familiar. Should he be on the hot seat? Talked to Bud. He said warm, but I was shocked when I saw Marcus Freeman has not won more than five games in a row as the head coach of Notre Dame.
Yeah, but I mean, he's a great recruiter.
Yeah, but if you can't win the games with these kids, then what's the point?
Here's the question. Is any coach going to be able to take Notre Dame back to the national championship level? It's obviously, even Brian Kelly, as great as he was, got to the title game, got killed.
Yeah.
So maybe there are limitations in the program that aren't about Freeman. I think that's a legit question.
Okay, but this was supposed to be the easy schedule. Once you got past Texas A&M, then you stub your own toe against Northern Illinois.
Well, listen, I mean, you lost in Northern Illinois. What am I going to say?
A big one coming up against Purdue this weekend. Also, that LSU-USC game, South Carolina, not Southern Cal. LSU going to Columbia, where weather could be a major factor.
And weather back home, I think, is a major factor for LSU,
as well.
Too.
Yeah, this hurricane is no joke. It's gaining. It's a Category 1 right now. Crazy. So, and something to keep an eye on, because if you're LSU and you start the game, you start the season 1-2, I think people are going to be very happy. 855-212-4227. So much more to get to, including today's great debate. Who is the greatest NFL one-hit wonder of all time? 855-212-4227. Welcome back. Maggie Gray, Andrew Perloff. Get back to our great debate today, the greatest NFL one-hit wonders of all time. You guys have had some amazing nominees. But we all like vacations around here. Everybody does, obviously. Like, we love to work, and this is super fun to do, but everyone loves a good vacation. Would you do this? There's been a 9-month cruise that's been going around the world. It's like a Royal Caribbean cruise, and they're finally in their last week. And apparently everyone's exhausted and can't wait to get off the boat. And they are like, there's like someone unfortunately passed away. They've had all this weird weather stuff. There were rumors of swinging couples on the boat. At some point, they had to reroute the ship because military fighting in the Red Sea. Like, all these things have happened, and apparently everyone, like, can't wait to get off this ship. It's kind of, like, too much of a good thing.
Yeah. I remember you were excited about this before they left.
I was, because this, in theory, sounds kind of awesome, because when in your life are you going to be able to see 60 countries? Like, if you actually have the time and the money to do something like this, you start in Miami and you end up like in Madagascar and places you never thought you would go.
Pearl, is there a theme that we should be worried about here? Because Maggie also wants to be stuck in outer space.
Yeah.
Do you not want to be home?
No. I said, what did I say? The International Space Station. Oh, no. I said
I'd
rather
Netflix
be
there.
I said I'd rather be in the International Space Station than stuck in the elevator with the other chargers. Because at least you got Netflix.
These two stories seem very connected, right? Like, there's something about being away for a year that is on your mind.
Yeah.
No, why would I want to be? I think in this fantasy, if I'm on this cruise for 9 months, my family's with me. I'm not alone.
Okay.
How boring would that be?
I thought Jake French is going on that trip, too.
Maggie, have you been on a cruise?
I have. I've been lucky enough to be on a cruise. I got to go on a
lucky enough to be on a cruise.
I went on a really great one through Europe.
Don't give me
with
that.
My grandmother.
Like, don't worry about sounding bougie. Everybody's been on a cruise.
Like, I haven't.
You get on a Carnival cruise for about $300 a night right now.
Oh, I would love to go on a Carnival cruise right now. We were talking about that because my family can never agree on where to eat, and so if we go on a trip with our extended family, dinner time is just a nightmare because everyone wants to eat different things. We all want to eat at different times, and it's such a pain in the butt. That I was like, why don't we go on a cruise? Because then everyone can just eat all day and we'll all gain 10 pounds in 3 days and be fat and happy.
I follow the cruise industry closely. Don't ask me why. I'll watch any documentary on how a cruise ship works. So there's so many levels now. You get on these gigantic, you see these gigantic ships maybe on the river. So there's all these levels. Like there's basically like 9 levels where you pay up, like the base experience kind of stinks and you have a 70%.
It's like Leonardo DiCaprio Titanic.
Yeah. You basically have a 70% chance of getting food poisoning. There was a horror story this week about some guy who got sick on a boat. I mean, it is a tough place. But then the high-end ones are great.
Tough place. You got a baked Alaska every day. It is a nightmare, guys.
Exactly. You have no idea what's really happening out there on the waters. It is not like that at all. There is not baked Alaska. There is a wide range of... I had a friend who did one out of Miami last year. They're like, last minute decided to get on it. He's like, this is a nightmare.
What happened? Because he got food poisoning?
Oh, it's just... It was a really... not a well-planned cruise, and the food wasn't great, and the drinks weren't great, and the people weren't great, and these kids had a terrible time. And
oh boy,
this happens. I'm telling you, it's not all what you think it is.
Well, I had a great experience when I went on a cruise. I got to see a lot of really cool things.
Where'd you go?
We started in Istanbul and ended in Barcelona. It was like the trip of a lifetime. It was me, my grandmother, and my cousin. And he was wearing braces at the time. And I was like, you're never getting in the casino. The braces are just giving you away. Dead giveaway. And I was right. I waltzed right in the casino. I was like 16. And he goes in, flashes one smile. They're like, I'm sorry, sir. This is for adults only. And I was like waving to him from the blackjack table. Where I promptly lost a lot of money.
What did we learn?
I don't know if I'd want to do 9 months on a cruise ship is what I learned here. These people seem like they're wrung out.
You either have to be rich or retired.
That's what I'm thinking.
Or unless you could take your Comrex over there and you guys could go around the
world. Hey, I'm in Madagascar today. It's awesome. Bogus, you have headlines for us. Save me.
UConn men's basketball, South Carolina women's basketball had their day at the White House yesterday, celebrating their national titles with President Biden. Second straight year that Dan Hurley made the trip to D.C., so you'd think he'd be better at this by now.
Yeah, I thought this would be easier in year two. Oh, man, I've been to the White House before. It is scary as stick to the script. All right. Thank you, Mr. President.
Oopsie.
Whoops. I'm telling you, you can take a guy out of Jersey City, but you can't take Jersey City out of the guy.
This is actually South Carolina's first trip to the White House. They did not go after their titles in 2017 and 2022. Lawyers for the Miami-Dade officer on administrative duty for his part in Tyreek Kill's detainment Sunday want their client back on active duty immediately. Meanwhile, Hill's agent, Drew Rosenhaus, said yesterday the officers involved should be fired. As for their game tomorrow night, the Dolphins did not have running backs Devon Achane and Raheem Mostert at practice yesterday. Home run history last night in Seattle for Manny Machado.
So it'll be another 1-2 offering from Kirby. He kicks and fires. Manny swings, hits it in the air to center field and deep. Rodriguez is back. He will watch. It's going to go. Home run history for Manny Machado. His 164th in a Padre uniform, now the most prolific home run hitter in the history of the San Diego Padres.
That's Jesse Agler on Padres Radio. A question for the group. Who had the career home run record for the Padres up until now?
That was sad, by the way, that 164. Steve Garvey jumped to mind, but it can't be. He wasn't there long enough.
No.
Dave Winfield?
Not Dave Winfield.
Wow. Gwynn did it.
I think Gwynn is fifth.
Is it Ken Kimmett? No.
It's not him. It's not Phil Nevin, another big bopper
did
I thought of.
Did someone say Dave Winfield?
Greg Vaughn?
Nope. Not Adrian Gonzalez actually was higher on the list than all those guys, but the man he beat.
Go ahead.
Was a gentleman I did not know of until this morning, a guy named Nate Colbert, who played on the original Padre team in the late 60s into the 70s. Hmm. 164 career home runs as a Padre.
Wow.
Yeah. More than Gwynn, more than Winfield, more than Adrian Gonzalez, but no longer more than Manny Machado, who I'm also surprised has been a Padre long enough to get up the rank.
Which is funny because now if you think about Machado being a Hall of Famer, is it Orioles or is it Padre?
Or his one glorious year as a Dodger?
Oh, right. Remember when he went hustle to first or whatever? Wasn't there some kind of controversy about that? Anyway.
There's been more than one Manny Machado controversy.
That's fair.
The Padres won this game, by the way, 7-3 over the Mariners. They are 4.5 games behind the Dodgers in the NL West since L.A. lost at home to the Cubs last night, 6-3. The Pods also keep their half-game lead on the Diamondbacks atop the wild card chase. Arizona blanking Texas 6-0.
Can I give you an assignment? I know I'm not.
Yeah.
I wonder if it's 164. Is that the lowest home run record of any team in baseball? Like, is there anyone who has less of their leading home run hitter? I mean, I know there's some newer franchises, but like that's got to be way low.
But even the newer franchises,
like the Diamondbacks,
The Rays, and like I feel like they've had sluggers. So.
Yeah, I mean, Luis Gonzalez would have to have had more than 165 Diamondbacks home runs.
Yeah, it feels so low.
Yeah, Luis has 224.
And Goldschmidt has more than that probably.
I always thought 252 for the Mets was like insanely low, and then I just heard that Padres stat, and I was like, wow, I feel better.
And they're only 7 seasons younger than the Mets. They've been around for a long time.
What about the Rays? You just said the Rays.
Yeah, that would be my first guess as someone who doesn't have 164, because people are there so short usually.
Yeah.
Evan Longoria has 261.
Oh, there you go.
There you go.
Hey, he was there a long time.
Thank you, Nico. And the stats department will prove us wrong again.
The Padres are the lowest, by the way. They are the lowest.
There you go. Thank you, EJ. Also the stats department.
The Guardians beat the White Sox. The Royals won at Yankee Stadium, both 5-0 finals. So Cleveland remains 3.5 games clear of KC in the Central. U.S. men's soccer finally confirmed that Mauricio Pochettino is its new head coach yesterday, just before a friendly with New Zealand in Cincinnati. Christian Pulisic scored in the 69th minute, but the Americans settled for a 1-1 draw. That's 4 straight winless games. And from the WNBA, Marina Mabry scored 26 in the Suns' 86-66 win in L.A. They are now a game behind Minnesota for the 2 seed. Guys, back to you.
Andrew Bogish, thank you so much. Coming up, lots more to do, including we check in on one quarterback's future. The outcome could be very dicey. We'll tell you about it next. It's Maggie and Perloff. Welcome back. Maggie Gray, Andrew Perloff. Got so much going on today, including our great debate, the greatest NFL one-hit wonder of all time. I want to quickly go to our Twitter feed on X. So right now, the greatest NFL one-hit wonder, we gave you 4 options because that's all that fits in the poll. Icky Woods and Tim Tebow basically neck and neck right now. So that's Nico and that's Andrew Bogish's selections. Josh Gordon, Perloff, that's you, 18%. He's in 3rd place. And my Rex Grossman at 5% is flailing. Just like Rex, actually.
Yeah.
It's kind of true to form.
I think your pitch was a little bit odd. You're like, this guy was terrible, but he got to the Super Bowl.
Well, I mean, and then what happened?
Got killed.
The crickets. EJ, your pick of Peyton Hillis, very good. I think that would have done well in our poll. Obviously, you were deferring to me there, but I think your selection would have done very well.
Yeah, if I can make a plea to that bum Elon Musk, can we please get more than 4 selections on a poll like that? Because I think this is a poll that I think would have been really interesting to see 6 different options here. Because I think David Tyree is a very interesting option. I think he would have got a lot of votes too. So I had to be very selective with this poll. But I was bummed
Tyree didn't make the list.
And also,
I'm sorry, Nick.
RG3, which was Kaplan's selection as well. So RG3 was on there. Another we got a lot one. Of good ones for you if you want to weigh in at 855-212-4227. Okay, let's get to our very favorite college football coach. Of course, we got to keep an eye on Deion.
Daily. Do you believe that? Deion. You believe that?
This portion of the show is brought to you by Ethos Life, the easy way to get life insurance in 10 minutes, up to $2 million in coverage with no medical exam and just a few health questions. Get your free quote at checkethos.com, not available in all states. Well, it's looking a little bleak for Colorado, but as we know, with everything that has to do with Deion Sanders, it's more than just what happens on the football field. So let's hear cut one. This is Deion having to push back on a news story that came out that Colorado is no longer playing the fight song after they score a touchdown. Instead, they're playing a song that was performed by Shedeur Sanders.
Whoever reported that I told the band not to play the fight song. That's idiotic. Y'all know that. Like, when you saw that, you know that was a lie. We got to start having some kind of accountability.
More from Dion says the lies about his program are affecting people beyond just him.
Please know that that stuff affects people. Me, you've been attacking me my whole life, so I'm good. But other people that's involved, band members, Buffs, Faithful, and alumni and all that, sometimes they don't know what to believe. And oftentimes in life, we believe the first thing we hear, and which we shouldn't. I just would challenge you to be more responsible.
Yeah, I mean, listen, this is a huge scandal. And in fact, I'm glad that Dion is. What on earth are you talking about? You're worried about people's feelings. You came in and told the team they stunk, and you're worried about band members now? I mean, I hadn't heard that sound, but that's even more ridiculous than normal Dion. Right? Like,
I'm not laughing at the situation, but
like, what does a tuba player care?
He doesn't get to play the fight song now. No, this is one that feels like it's pretty easy to clear up. They're on the road at Nebraska last week, so that's not happening. I don't know. I guess you play the fight song a few times when you're on the road, but it's not like a home game. Like, did it happen against North Dakota State or did it not happen? I don't know. I was watching on TV. I couldn't tell.
I could care less. Like, what? It makes no difference in anyone's life. Maybe a few people in Boulder, right?
I think the thought is that this is so much about Shador. And by the way, a lot of college football programs are all about the quarterback and all about the stars. So it's not like this is so different. But the idea that it's just only about Shador and only about getting Shador and Travis Hunter to the NFL, and it's sort of like mission accomplished as long as they're first-round picks and stars, as opposed to how's this Colorado team doing?
Well, I think the whole Dion thing, if you actually pull back, the whole Dion thing is when the team does badly, everyone kills Dion. When the team does well, everyone's on board with Dion.
Welcome to sports.
Yeah, I know. It is a little ridiculous. And he plays right into it by being so sensitive. Like, he said, oh, you could come after me. I've been getting criticized my whole career. It feels like he's more thin-skinned than ever.
Well, that's not true. If you do actually say anything negative about Dion, he won't answer questions about you.
Yeah.
He'll ask, not kick you out of a press conference, but, like, pretty close.
He's getting more sensitive by the day. I mean, like, why is he so... He feels like he's about to cry because of this story. Like, this is a minor story, right?
Well, it also has to do with his son, so it's definitely a little bit more personal. And trying to paint him, like, in a bad light, I guess. Like, it's all about Shador, me. It's not about
the team.
But the
story was Dion told the band to do that, not that Shador told the band to do that.
Right. Well, remember the story that came out a couple months ago, which he also said was definitely not true, which was that the team, it was mandatory that they attend Shador's concert. Like, Shador, another musical act was at Colorado performing, but Shador, I think, got to go on stage or perform before or something, and it was mandatory that they all go. And Dion said that was not true. I actually didn't have a problem with that. If your teammate is performing on campus, you should go to that, especially the quarterback. That's like team building stuff. I didn't mind that story, even though they said it was not true.
But obviously, you guys were saying that I had a example of transference where I was blaming other people for being bandwagon jumpers.
Yeah.
Dion talking
when
about
you are the number one bandwagon jumper.
Dion talking about accountability is rich. I mean, has he been accountable as head coach? Like, he loses and starts blaming everybody on earth, including the media. I don't think that he's exactly been a bastion of accountability as a Colorado head coach.
EJ, you wanted to say something about this.
Yeah, we just asked about, you know, what happened that North Dakota State game regarding this Shador Sanders song.
Yeah, was this
did
true?
They not play the band? So the school also, combined with Dion at the press conference, released a statement saying that nobody ever asked the band to refrain from playing the fight song. After a touchdown, the band plays Glory Glory Colorado. After a point for a touchdown, the band plays Fight CU. Has been standard practice for years. When Shador scores a touchdown, the band will wait a moment for a small snippet of Shador's song to play before immediately kicking into Glory Glory Colorado. This is what happened at North Dakota State. They went on to say that apparently they do the same thing for when Alejandro Mata, the kicker, kicks a field goal. They apparently play his song for also playing Fight CU. So they play snippets of their players' songs. I don't know how many more players other than Mata
yeah, right.
have songs.
Why are you reading this like? Why are you reading this like this is a real story? Like you're like, are you at the newscaster voice here? Like you were breaking down. There's a Pruder film
no,
right there.
No, it's the remix is essentially what this is. This is the remix. You hit a little of the Shador, and then you go into Glory, Glory, Colorado, which I didn't even know was the name of the song.
EJ, your tone sounded quite serious there. You're like, no, no, no. I want to clear this up. Like,
it's an
what
official
are we talking
statement.
About here? Shador's rap song, the fight song. What is
yes,
going
bro,
on?
It's
Am I
called
missing
the
something?
Daily Dion.
Yeah,
we got to check
in
on Colorado.
Maggie asked an important question. I thought maybe listeners would want to know. So I if it was an official statement, I wanted to make sure Colorado got their side of the story, as ridiculous as it may be.
Even Kaplan, who's a Colorado alum, says this is so insane. Which side? Which point? That they would do it, that this is a skit, not a scandal, that this is even a topic.
Well, I think Bud Elliott was on earlier this hour, said that Colorado would sign up for all this again. You have to remember how bad the Buffs were before Dion got there. They would take this nonsense any day of the week over 1-12.
Oh, no doubt.
Yeah.
But a good point that they might not even get invited into the Big 12 if not for Dion. I mean, it was that bad. You know, big game coming up this weekend.
And they're big favorites again.
Colorado State, excuse me. Yeah. Big time in-state rival. Last year, this game went to, what, double overtime? Jay Norvell, the coach of Colorado State, was calling out Dion, saying, you know, basically saying, like, his mom didn't raise him right. If he's was it wearing sunglasses inside, was that what he got upset about?
Sunglasses, and I think a hat, too.
Ah.
He was sunglasses, hat combination.
Wow. I mean, if you just do the facial hair thing, you're basically at the New York Yankees. Like, how old school can we get on this?
Okay. Well, I'm curious. If they win this game, is it going to be a week of where everyone's on Deion's side? Like, is it purely about wins and losses, and we make up all the other stuff? Like, I don't know. I'm so annoyed by this. Everything about Dion now is driving me crazy. I'm sorry. And the whole program. Like, just go out and win some football games.
I feel like now we should do the Daily Dion twice a show just to see how crazy can we make Pearl off. Yeah, Nico.
Yeah.
Did you guys hear what Shador said after the game against Nebraska?
He asked whether how much did Dylan Raiola get touched as the quarterback on the other side?
I mean, that's just awful leadership skills as the quarterback of the team. I mean,
he's Shador Sanders. It's Colorado. What do you expect? What do you expect it to be? Tebow giving a speech at halftime? What have you been watching this program?
Right, but like we talk about how this guy's going to be a first round pick in the NFL draft, but like, don't GMs look at that and say, I don't want this guy on my team if he's not going to lead well?
I think GMs look at talent. And I think they ignore a lot. I don't think this is enough of a red flag to be like, oh, that's a do not draft for me. Now, maybe someone would say, I don't know how much Dion I'm going to get. Like, do I get Dion criticizing my team and making it a story if something is going wrong with Shador? Like, that's a great question. Maybe we put up as a poll. Does Dion help his son get to when it comes to the NFL, or does he hurt him?
Ooh, tough question.
Right? Because I think a lot of people... I think a lot of people revere Dion because of his NFL career, because of the skill. Like, if you're inside the NFL, I think you get it, how great he was.
Yeah, he's also a very charming person when he wants to be. Very charismatic. Did you guys see, speaking of, we're just talking about random clips, did you see when Shador and Shiloh were talking trash to each other? And Shiloh goes, man, that was the stupidest pass you ever threw when he threw that bomb that stopped the clock in week one.
Yeah.
And he goes, Shiloh, you're the dirtiest player in college football. Shiloh, by the way, no one's talking about the fact that Shiloh is like a 1980s safety, just headhunting, getting in there dirty. I like him.
He could be an eagle. So he probably will be. He's out like, I saw he's out like 2 to 4 weeks. I was like, two weeks? Dude's arm is broken. He's in a sling. But anyway, tough guy.
It is. There definitely is a circus feel, and that makes more pressure for them to win. Like, this is actually a huge game, Colorado State. Like, the narrative is reset every week with Colorado. If they win this, I'm just very curious where we go. If they lose, and also another poll question, we have to, will Dion be there next year? That, I think, is a big question. That really depends on how they do. If they lose and he doesn't have a quarterback next year, which he doesn't have as of yet, I mean, wouldn't you leave if you were Dion?
Well, I think that it doesn't matter if he stays or goes. The one thing I think that is going to continue to sort of plague Colorado is he's got to get into the high schools. Like, it's fine. The transfer portal is great to backfill. It's like free agency in the NFL. You can't build a whole team of free agents. You have to get into the high schools. You've got to build your foundation around guys you're recruiting. And Dion has already said, I'm not going to the high schools. He had a weird reason for it. He said he's like too famous, and that if he goes to one school and doesn't go to another, the coach will be so offended that he doesn't go, that it's going to reflect negatively. That Deion is very famous. I get it. But Nick Saban is very famous. And I think Nick Saban was going into high school. So, I think Steve Sarkisian is very famous. And I think he goes into high school. Same with Kirby Smart, all these guys. So you got to get into high school, and you got your foundation has to be your own recruits. It can't be another new 50 guys every year. I think we've kind of shown in college football, showing, like with FSU, you know, Florida State basically had a team where they brought in tons and tons of transfers, and they're 0-2.
Yeah, but I mean, I think the big question is, what is Deion's time frame there? Is he really thinking long term, or is he like, there's just so much pressure to win immediately there for him, and he set that up, that I just think he's looking at a different time frame than what you're talking about. I totally agree. He should be doing this, but I don't think he thinks he has time.
Well, there's also a different standard. I don't think if Deion Sanders walks away from Colorado, say Shador gets drafted top 10, Travis Hunter gets drafted top 10, and he walks off into the sunset, it doesn't matter. He's still famous. He's still Deion. He's still got the gold jacket on. EJ, I think you compared it yesterday to Magic Johnson. Magic Johnson stopped being the president of the Lakers in the messiest way possible, and everyone still loves him because he's Magic, you know? And people are still going to love Deion for that. He hands it over to Pat Shurmur. I don't think anyone's going to cry foul.
I totally agree with that, Maggie. And the one thing I think my brother mentioned this, I think it was a good point that I think people forget, is Deion also had some massive health issues. Like when we talk about why maybe he's like haphazardly, and maybe that's a poor term, this is the way he wants to do it, but it feels like haphazardly throwing his team together with all these transfers, not wanting to go into schools. Like he did, you know, he lost, you know, toes. He almost had his leg amputated. He also may feel like he has some health issues that don't really allow him to maybe go the lengths that maybe other coaches would to acquire high school talent. And maybe in terms of putting a team together, maybe he feels like this has to be more of a quick fix because of the health complications that seem to be kind of, you know, he seems to constantly be at risk. Like it feels almost random where you think he's good and then you hear he's in the hospital, unfortunately. So that may be another aspect about this as well, as Deion's health moving forward.
In the chat, you guys are weighing in at youtube.com/InfinitySportsNet. Nick in Texas, our pal who called in from the Waffle House yesterday, like the OG that he is, says, give Deion 4 years total. Just got to pause on that. How cool is it that Nick called from Waffle House yesterday? He had Jessica on the phone, his waitress. We're triangulating the questions. And I just want to stop on this for a second because I lost a bet to Perloff. This is going to be my most painful one ever because I've got to go sit at a Waffle House for 24 hours. And for every waffle I eat, I take an hour off the time. The pain that's going to accompany this is not going to be insignificant. Now, is it going to be like, you know, arm amputated childbirth? No, we're not talking about that. But it's going to be awful.
That's such a bet. I would do it. It's not a bad job.
You say that, Nick. It is going to be bad. But I was. Tell me if you thought this, Pearl.
Nick wants to help, by the way.
Yeah, I wish. If only I could have a lifeline. If only this could be a group project. But unfortunately, I got to go solo on this one because I lost a Perloff. But here's a question. We talked to Nick and then Jessica, the waitress at Waffle House yesterday. And I asked Nick to ask Jessica, what's the most waffles anyone's ever eaten in one sitting on her watch?
Mm-hmm.
And she said 3.
Yeah, that was not encouraging for you.
That's an alarmingly low number.
I was shocked that each waffle, even before you put on the syrup, has 410 calories.
That's the least of my problems in terms of like the pure calorie count. It's just one day. Like, I'll get over that. It's just, how is all this going to physically fit in my stomach is just...
Oh, that's easy.
I don't think
you
so,
can't
dude.
Eat, you can't eat anything except waffles that day. You can't have breakfast. You just have to.
Drinking a lot of water will help, right? Like with the hot dog contest where they keep drinking water.
Oh, like to train for this?
Like, well, no, the hot dog, because you're trying to go so fast, Nick.
No, I'm not going for, you do have to go for speed, but not like.
Just to wash it down, obviously. And...
Right.
I think also you're going to want to have syrup. It'll make it easier.
It would just taste better.
Yeah, exactly. I just think eating a dry waffle is out of the question.
Also, syrup, I don't think is going to that doesn't take up a lot of space.
You got to put it through chai, the chocolate chip, and the peanut butter, too, as long as you're there.
I don't have room for any of that.
No, come on. No, as long as you're there, you're not going to. When they said there were peanut butter waffles, that sounds amazing.
I can't waste space with chocolate chips and peanut butter. One. This is not a game.
You're eating 15 waffles, just one.
No.
I'm getting it. Nick, you with me?
I'm in.
You're going to have to fast for 3 days before.
How about after? I'm not going to eat for a week.
I'm getting jealous. Anyone else?
Oh, if only we could trade places.
I would.
We can turn back to the NFL next.